Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound. Happy Father's Day. It's John Boquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media, sending out my love to my one and only son, Hunter. Thanks for tuning in to the award-winning For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, today we're catching up with supporters and beneficiaries of the Catherine Violet Hubbard Animal Sanctuary as we take a trip to Catherine's Butterfly Party to celebrate and honor the memory of this little girl who was a victim of the Sandy Hook Elementary School tragedy in December of 2012. The Butterfly Party brings together dozens of organizations dedicated to celebrating Catherine and to the care and placement of loving pets and unwanted animals who are too often cast away. We'll chat with a number of participants to learn where you can connect to a loving furry friend, learn a few things about rabbits, birds, reptiles, even porcupines, and we'll focus in on some of the more exotic pets that may seem pretty cool, but may be totally wrong for you or your family. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Boquette, right after this reminder. For over 40 years, the nonprofit Connecticut Narcotic Officers Association, NEOA, has been on the forefront providing innovative training services and educational material to officers throughout the state, and also reaching out to communities, members, educators, nurses, and school administrators to provide intervention strategies and drug awareness to our vulnerable populations. At the same time, every year, NEOA members provide drug education awareness training and explain the consequences of drug abuse to middle and high school students. But they can't continue without your support. Consider making a tax-deductible contribution to the Connecticut NEOA today, or attending an upcoming fundraising concert featuring the music of Frank Sinatra and the Rob Zappula Big Band at Bridgeport's Klein Auditorium coming up on June 24th. Want details? Call 800-424-0160 or just visit NEOA.org. All right, well, the true spirit of Catherine Violet Hubbard is alive here today in Newtown as we're joined by her mom, Jen Hubbard, here at the Butterfly Party at Fairfield Hills. Jen, welcome back to the program. Thanks for taking a few minutes to talk with us. How are things going with the animal sanctuary?
It's phenomenal, and a day like today is a true testament to how far we've come.
So what is the party that we're at today?
Yep, it's Catherine's Butterfly Party. It is how we've decided to celebrate Catherine's birthday. She would be 11 on June 8th. And so our goal today is to give her the all-animal party that she always requested, and in turn find these dogs, cats, bunnies, and parrots loving homes.
And how many potentially adoptable pets are represented here today?
So it's 19 rescues. Each rescue has about five or six animals, so 100 animals.
Wow, that's great. And this is not the first of these events.
No, this is the third that we've done. Every year it gets bigger and bigger. We have people that show up from the tri-state area and spend the afternoon. You know, for us, to see the smiles on so many people's faces in a world that we all unfortunately know and have experienced is hard. To have an afternoon that's carefree and innocent with no expectations is a win for us.
Great. So you also have some excitement going on. Last time we visited you in the skeleton of the barn, and now the barn is nearly complete. What's going on sort of across the street here in Newtown at the sanctuary?
Yeah, at the sanctuary, well, we've really two things. We've started programs. We're partnering with Newtown Schools and offering workshops once a month while we're in building mode. We have a barn, Rescue Rebuild, a program of the greater good, came up and refurbed the barn for us last year. This year they were back in droves with over 300 volunteers, and we have built paddock fencing.
So what is the eventual plan when that entire new animal sanctuary is up and running, and what's the timeline on that?
So the timeline is dependent on regulatory approval. We're working with the town on getting our building permits and then having the funds to actually build the buildings. Our hope is that we can do something starting in 2018. The plan is to have farm animal sanctuary up there, so give some small farm animals a place where they can rest and heal, and also provide education to the community on how to be kind and compassionate to the creatures we share the world with.
And that's just part of what's been going on at the many workshops. It almost seems, I know it's not weekly, but it almost seems like every week, if you're not having one, we're hearing about a new program being launched. Give the folks who are listening from, you know, Long Island and around Connecticut an idea of what they can experience if they come to the Catherine Violet Hubbard Animal Sanctuary here in Newtown, and why they should hit your website often.
Yep. So we're always doing new stuff. We have monthly Sundays at the sanctuary. Sundays were a big day for our family. So we really feel like if we can give a Sunday afternoon a month and share with people ways that they can learn about their woods, their environment, whatever's happening seasonally. It's a free workshop. We invite families up. Smaller scale than the butterfly party, spend the afternoon with us. But we also do other sorts of programs. We have hiking trails, self-guided geocaching, birding areas that we don't need to be there for people to come and visit the sanctuary and just make a day of it, hike the trails, pack a lunch. It's a quiet and serene place where people can just come and think and read. And as we continue to grow, we'll offer more structured workshops, but in the meantime, it's mostly a drop-in.
And a lot of these workshops and walk-up activities, these sort of half-day or full-day, the first thing I noticed as you started scheduling them, it wasn't just one thing for an hour and then everybody hangs out. It's almost like, you know, 10 o'clock something, 11 o'clock something, noon something, 1 o'clock something, and so many of them involve animals, folks who come out, and especially the kids, they can reach out and touch the animals that they may end up, you know, encountering out here in the Connecticut environment.
Yeah, you know, one of the things about Catherine is she just had a beautiful sense of wonder and awe of all creatures and a beautiful sense of discovery. So we feel like if we can offer a workshop that's relevant for a time of year. So last month we focused on invasive plants. Everybody's gardening now, so why not teach people how to use native plants? And we worked with the 4-H, the local kids, and they brought their goats because goats are invasive plant managers. So, you know, really unique ways that people can be compassionate and accepting to everything that we share this world with.
Yeah.
Our hope is that if we can just plant a seed, then we create a kinder and gentler place.
As you're looking forward into the summer, have you scheduled any specific workshops yet in June or July that folks can plan to come to?
You know, we're going to do some pop-ups. We're not ready for camps just yet. Okay. And so our philosophy is if we're going to do it, we're going to do it right.
Sure.
Make sure that everybody has what they need. So we're not ready for camps yet, but check the website. Come back often.
Yeah.
CVHFoundation.org. And keep your eyes open. We're going to do some pop-up workshops and afternoon events.
Yeah, that's the other cool thing is that you make it easy to access even if folks can't come up to the actual sanctuary.
You got it.
You have events at other sites in Newtown, like the Meeting House or the library.
Yep, we try to spread ourselves out. We feel like the sanctuary is part of the community, and right now we don't have a building per se to welcome people. So we go and work with other people that do have buildings. So library, the Edmund Town Hall. We're actually in the school systems. We do once a month that is an outreach and enrichment program for science. Not every kid is a field or a ballet kid. And so we feel like if we can offer that kid like Catherine that just loved the earth sciences an opportunity to spark some excitement and fire in their belly, then that's what we do. And we bring it to the schools now since the schools can't come to us.
Excellent. And just to wrap things up, how can folks help your foundation above and beyond, going on the website, and making a donation? Mm-hmm. Are there or will there be greater volunteer opportunities for folks to give their time?
Of course, just like we're doing today, we have a need for people to host Cups of Kindness stands, to volunteer their time, to engage their corporations. So aside from donating monetarily, you can sign up to volunteer at info@cvhfoundation.org. Send us your name, what you're interested in, and we'll add you to a roster. And over the summer, we'll reach back out and give people specifics.
Jen Hubbard, representing the Catherine Violet Hubbard Animal Sanctuary here on at the site of the butterfly party, as we're working through the crowd, and hopefully you'll hear some barking or meowing over the next few segments that will inspire you to look up some of the organizations that are participating here. But Jen, thank you so much. Best of the family, and we'll see you around town.
Thanks so much.
All right, now we're visiting with Amanda Garrison. She represents the Danbury Animal Welfare Society over here in Western Connecticut. So Amanda, what area are the animals that come to your organization from?
Most of them are from municipal shelters in Kentucky and West Virginia.
And what is the turnaround, or the turnover? Do you get a lot of, is it just dogs and cats for you guys?
Yes.
What's the volume that you guys are able to handle?
We can hold 35 dogs and probably about 40 cats at max. And we get, at least for the dogs, we've been getting transports almost every week. Okay. So turnaround time has been pretty quick lately.
So how do you, of all across the South, how does an abandoned or distressed dog or cat in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, find its way to the Danbury Animal Welfare Society?
There's a very large network of rescue groups in the South and Northeast that work together. When we have openings, I email with the directors of the shelters down there. They post dogs that they think would get adopted quickly up here. And based on our numbers and the kinds of dogs that we have, I'll choose from the ones that they have available, and then they'll transport them up to us.
We'll probably be talking to a few people here today about criteria, but for your organization, Danbury Animal Welfare Society, what is the process for someone to, how do they learn about you, connect with you, and then maybe come home with a forever pet?
We've got open house hours every day of the week. Our website is always updated, and it's linked to Pet Finder as well, so if people do a search, they can find us there. We're also on social media. We do Facebook and Twitter postings. So people come down during open house, they talk to an adoption counselor, we try to match them with the right dog, and once they put in an application, it's generally about 3 to 5 days from when they can take the dog home with them or cat.
How about for you? What brought you to this organization? Is this the first animal group that you've worked with, or has this been something you've been doing all your adult life?
This is the first rescue I've worked with. I was actually on my lunch break about 10 years ago, and Dawes was doing an adoption event at a Starbucks. So I walked over, I asked if they needed volunteers. They said yes, I signed up, and then just kind of history from there.
So what are some of the rewards that you've been able to, I guess if you ask a teacher, they say, oh, seeing my students come back when they're adults and they're married and they have kids, you know, obviously pets don't have that level of lifespan, but are you still seeing the owners, if not the dogs that you helped adopt back when you started?
Absolutely. I started as an adoption counselor probably about 8 years ago, and I remember one of the first dogs I adopted out, she comes to our walk for animals every year with her new dad. So it's just really awesome to be able to see that they're still together, still doing well.
Yeah. So what's the level of vetting or what do folks need to do if they're serious about getting a dog? And it would probably be helpful to explain to people what they might need to bring with them to get the process started or finished. Mm-hmm. If they come out to visit your center, which it's the Danbury Animal Welfare Society Dawes, but you're actually located in Bethel.
Correct. Yes, on Route 53 in Bethel. They don't need to bring anything with them. Typically, we like everyone that's going to be living in the household with the dog or cat to meet. When they come, we try to match them up with a dog based on their activity level, what kind of time they have, that kind of thing. If they currently have a pet, we always call their veterinarian just to make sure that they're up to date with vaccines. If they're in a rental situation, we like to check with the landlord just to make sure there's you know, things that are okay there. And then we usually ask for a personal reference as well. But a lot of it is just based on our conversations with the family, watching the interactions with the dog, and just trying to get the best fit possible for everyone.
So it's not just a drive up, say I want that one, and they're out of there in 10 minutes?
No, we don't do same-day adoptions.
Okay. What is the length of time that it typically takes between making the ideal matchup between pet and new hopeful owner and the day that pet goes home?
Typically 3 to 5 days. Say if someone comes in on a Sunday and they put an application in, generally during the week we'll be able to get that dog home, unless there's some kind of medical issue, or if the family has another dog, we like to do a dog intro to make sure everyone's going to get along. So sometimes that can prolong things.
Excellent. How do people find out more about you?
You can visit our website, daws.org, or you can check us out on Pet Finder, and we've got up-to-date listings of all of our available animals.
Amanda Garrison's with the Danbury Animal Welfare Society DAWS here at Catherine's Butterfly Party in Newtown. Thank you, Amanda.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
It is a rare opportunity to celebrate one of our stations in Torrington. We never get out to Torrington enough, and I'm so pleased to run into Cheryl Greeley, who's with CT START, the Connecticut State Animal Response Team, representing Region 5 or serving Region 5 here in Connecticut at the at Catherine's Butterfly Party at Fairfield Hills in Newtown. So, Cheryl, a little bit about yourself. What brought you to this pause of all the things you could have done?
Well, we love to set up at events like this, especially such a great event. We usually go into agricultural situations.
Oh, okay, like and, faux ag.
Yeah, we are definitely happy to be here today, happy to see all the response from all the people with all these animals that need adopting, mm-hmm. and we're just happy to be here.
Yeah. What's your background? How did you,
I'm just an animal lover?
Or?
Well, yeah, animal lover, and I got talked into working with the team in Torrington by the gentleman who runs the whole organization with the veterinarian who runs the other part of the organization.
Oh, okay.
About 6 years ago. I saw the trailers pull up when I got off the airplane and decided I needed to be a volunteer. And I've been doing it ever since, and we help out each other's locations. There are
okay.
locations all over the state.
Yeah, yeah. So what does CT START all about?
It's the Connecticut State Animal Response Team. When there is an emergency and the CERT team is called out to house people in a disaster situation, we house the pets.
Ah.
So you don't have to leave your home and leave your pet at home.
Oh, okay.
We will take your pet, house your pet. You're next door in the human area.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you can come over and feed your pet, walk your pet, take care of your pet. We just house them and keep them safe in a disaster situation.
And so this is in large scale where situations where there might be temporary shelters set up for people, and then the pets are housed right adjacent.
Right, and we are activated through FEMA.
Oh, okay.
So FEMA activates us, and our FEMA leader is Tom Vanini.
Okay.
And Region 5, which is Torrington, and he activates out of there and gets us all going.
And tell me a little bit about the training or what you need to learn to be part of one of the. Are there more than five regions in Connecticut?
No, we are the Region 5 area, so it's from Torrington down to Danbury.
Okay.
Okay. Region 2 is Canton, West Hartford, that area, and then there's a Region 3 and 4, which is down by the shoreline.
Oh, okay. Is it the same criteria no matter where? Because obviously, the many radio stations that the program plays on, there may be people listening in Norwich or Enfield. There's a CT START regional volunteer opportunity near them.
Well, they'd have to start with CERT, which is the Community Emergency Response Team, which you have to train with the people sector first and get
Correct.
Certified through that. And then you can volunteer with CERT. There are some areas that don't have CERT in their areas, but we are happy to get anybody to volunteer with us once they take that CERT training.
Yeah.
And it's for the human sector. You know, they get everybody in and save, get the people out of their homes. And then we're the animal section. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So, and so it really, this is not only a great way for people who really love animals and care about making sure animals are cared for in a disaster situation, but by virtue of getting to CSTART, they are already trained and qualified to be a community response disaster support.
Exactly, exactly. And it's great. If you can get a hold of your emergency management directors in your area, you can sign up for a class, and it's basically a six-week class with training. You get certified, and then there's all kinds of training throughout the year.
Okay. And what are you doing here today at the Butterfly Party?
Today we're just showing what we do, and we're kind of backing up ASPCA, and we're just showing people how we set up our kennels and set up people. We have all kinds of volunteers here. We have pamphlets, things for kids to see. We got dog bones for all the dogs to come by and visit. So we're just showing exactly what we do.
Excellent. Well, thank you for teaching us about this organization, which I've heard of CERT. I've never heard of this or its official connection through FEMA to the larger scale disaster response and support. So very educational 5 minutes, Cheryl Greeley. Thank you so much. Cheryl is one of the many volunteers who are here at Catherine's Butterfly Party in Newtown today, representing CT START, or START, the Connecticut State Animal Response Team at Region 5. If you're interested in finding out more about this organization, check with your emergency preparedness office, local volunteer fire department, fire marshal's office, and find out about getting on your local CERT team, and maybe you'll get to be part of an existing or new CT CERT situation. Thanks, Cheryl. All right, now it's time for something completely different. No more getting licked all over by dogs. We're here with Michelle Bayek of Baybrook Farm and Rescue. Where is your outfit located?
We're right in Sandy Hook, right in Newtown.
Okay, tell us about these furry friends here. Mostly are all rabbits, huh?
We brought all the rabbits and one foster dog today. Yeah, we live on a farm. We've got horses. We'll take in anything on four legs and a tail, preferably furry. But we've got a little bit of everything on the farm, and right now we've been working with a shelter in New York, pulling a lot of their rabbits, because unfortunately after Easter, it's a big thing to dump off the rabbits that people don't want to take care of anymore, and we will keep them until they find homes, and we thought it would be something different than the dogs and the cats that are here. We wanted to get some other animals here too, so that people, because you know, not everybody can have a dog or a cat in their house, and it's nice to have a little critter that you might be able to.
Well, although there's a an inclination to make a joke about how many rabbits you actually have here when you started with two this morning. This is a serious subject that I don't think is discussed enough. It's something that, like, you know, I post on social around the Easter holiday. But, you know, this kind of revolving door of rabbits around the Easter time versus getting a lovely, cushy, stuffed one that can go anywhere.
Right, and that you're and more don't likely poop. To keep for longer than, you know, 3 weeks.
I actually
start posting on social media as well long before Easter, asking people please to maybe think about adopting rather than shopping for Easter rabbits. I know it's people's first inclination to get their kids a little Easter bunny at Easter time, and it's fine. But adults need to realize that the kids really don't have the ability to take care of an animal full time. It is the parents' responsibility. And unfortunately, it's normal for kids to lose interest. I had six kids. Yeah, the same thing happened in our home, too. So I try to ask people, please check in a rescue group first. There's so many rabbits that are just over that baby stage that are super pets. They're friendly. They're already socialized. They need homes as well. The little babies are probably going to get a home, no problem. But just to kind of stop the, you know, the constant breeding of animals over, you know, it's just, it's what happens is that the shelters end up with 30, 40 a month dropped off. And these guys deserve a chance too. It's not their fault. It's,
sure,
you know, they deserve a home as well. So we take in as many as we possibly can and keep them until they get good homes and give them the best life they can. And hope for the best.
How many rabbits do you have at Baybrook Farm and Rescue?
We have about 16 right now.
Oh, okay.
I brought eight with us today.
Oh, okay.
We brought the ones that I thought would be. We still have some that need a little work, need a little bit more socializing.
Yep.
You know, sometimes they get a little sour from being in a cage too long,
so we
take them and work with them a little bit longer. All these guys that we have here today are all spayed and neutered.
Yeah.
They're all vetted. They've been checked for mites and everything.
Anything rabbits get.
Anything that rabbits can get, we've had them checked for. And these are the bomb-proof rabbits. These are the ones I know can go right into a home and not have to worry about, you know, kids or dogs or cats or things like that.
Yeah.
So
now, are there different breeds or varieties of rabbit like there are with dogs and cats?
Absolutely. There's a ton. I honestly don't even know how many. I would venture to say a little, probably over 40 or so.
Oh, man.
There's quite a few.
And you have a good representation.
We've got a pretty good representation. There's quite a few that are larger, the giant breeds, Flemish Giants,
they go as big as ponies, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the potbelly pigs that were so nice when they weighed 10 pounds.
Yeah. but yeah, I mean, from small to large, we tried to bring a good variety of colors because we know people are visual, and it's, you know, this way they have a little something to, you know, different to look at and see if that there's anybody that piques their interest here. And,
great. Well, before we let you go, give us a little crash course on education in terms of the care and keeping of rabbits. If somebody wants a rabbit, why is it a good alternative pet?
Well, it's a nice pet to have if you can't have a dog or a cat because they do require socialization. They love people company, but they also, if need be, can be put in a cage. And you don't have to worry about them quite all day long. You know, they do need exercise.
Sure.
It'd be great to get a pen or something and let them run around. Every animal needs to stretch. But they're very hardy. They last longer than the hamsters and the gerbils and the guinea pigs. They have, you know, an 8 to 10 year old lifespan, which is nice. So that it's a substantial pet. They do have personalities. A lot of people think that they're just kind of, you stick them in a cage and that's it. If you play with them and you know, bond with them, they have great personalities. They get very excited to see you, that you can teach them tricks. And they're easy to care for. They need pellets, they need hay, and they need water.
Just don't send them to get your carrots.
Yeah, no, you won't come back, and don't give them any paperwork that you may need later on.
Okay.
That's for sure.
And what is the criteria for how is a rabbit best kept in a small home environment?
If you're going to do indoor, I would say at least a 3-foot cage, just so that they do have room to stretch their legs if you can't get them out all the time. Also, like I said, if you can get a pen, something that's, you know, just a couple feet high and a round pen like a puppy pen, it's great because it allows them to get stretch. Or throw them in your bathroom or your kitchen for a couple hours a day, let them run around. If your dogs and cats are friendly, if you do have them, they're fine with them usually. They should not have a problem. But,
how about weather exposure? Are they? You say they're a hardy pet. How are they 12 months a year?
I actually do have some rabbits that are outside. I don't have a lot of places don't like you putting a rabbit outside, and I think it's more so because you tend to forget about an animal that's outside.
Sure, yeah.
We do live, like I said, we live on a farm, so I'm outside a lot.
Yep.
But I have a couple hutches, and as long as it's got like an indoor section that's blocked from the wind, they're fine, and they grow a nice winter coat.
Great.
But yeah, like I said, they're very easy, they're very hardy, and they make great little pets. They make a great alternative to have a friend or a companion if you can't do the dog and cat, because it is a little less of a responsibility, but it also is as important a responsibility as any other animal.
So to wrap up, what is the, you know, what would you estimate is around what people should budget in terms of the accoutrement if they're coming out to either visit you or considering adopting a rabbit anywhere?
A hutch can run anything from, a cage can run anywhere from $20 to $100, depending on how large and how elaborate you want it to be.
But these are like dog and cat cages. They're not special
cages.
What
I have them in here today is the kennels, just so that I can transport them.
Oh, okay.
When they're back on my farm, they actually have a big 8x10 hutch. It's huge.
Okay.
Yeah, no, they live the life while they're not being shown here. But, something even like a medium-sized dog crate is very usable for that. But you can spend as much as you want on a home, but typically per month, I would say $30, $40.
Oh, just fresh water and pellets?
Get a water bottle. You need pellets and Timothy hay. because they need the roughage. Those are the two most important things. I give my guys a little bit of lettuce and a strawberry once in a while. And, you know, if you're making a salad and you have leftover veggies, all your cut up little pieces, they love a little.
Keeps them coming back.
Oh, yeah. No, they love it. They love that little extra treat. So.
Excellent. Michelle Bayek of Baybrook Farm and Rescue in Sandy Hook, Connecticut. Very educational. I really appreciate it. I'm glad I ran into you.
Thank you. I appreciate it, too.
Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning Father's Day edition of For the People right after this news. Attention all veterans and their families. On Saturday, June 24th, the Aspen Dental Practices in Waterbury, Hamden, Meriden, Manchester, Farmington, Torrington, Bristol, and Waterford are opening their doors to provide free dental care for thousands of veterans across the state. Local veterans can call 1-844-ASPEN-HMM to schedule an appointment at participating offices in Connecticut. Appointments are required and available on a first-come, first-served basis. It's part of Aspen Dental's Healthy Mouth Movement, a community-giving initiative to deliver free dental care to veterans. For more information, visit healthymouthmovement.com. Also, our radio station and the American Academy of Ophthalmology want to remind you that fireworks injuries cause approximately 10,000 visits to emergency departments every year, most of them involving children who suffer eye injuries. The most disabling injuries occur with illegal firecrackers, and most of these injuries are caused by legal fireworks parents buy for their children, like sparklers, firecrackers, bottle rockets, and Roman candles. Every year, ophthalmologists, physicians who specialize in medical and surgical eye care, treat thousands of patients who suffer a range of fireworks-related injuries, from cuts and bruises to damaged corneas and ruptured eyeballs. To help reduce the number of potentially blinding fireworks accidents this holiday season, the AAO wants to help ensure people get the facts about fireworks and learn the many myths about fireworks safety. Just visit their website, AAO.org.
All right. Well, I never get a chance to pass up the opportunity to talk to interesting guests. Andrew, hello. Hello.
It's really scary.
Oh, sorry. Hello. Oh, look at the head. Yep. He doesn't say hello.
Yeah, hats, new objects. That's all scary to him.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll talk to Mom for a few minutes. So what is Andrew?
Andrew is a medium self-crested cockatoo. He's only 3 years old, and in his short 3 years, he's already been purchased and surrendered due to his needs. He's going to live at least 70 years old with some good animal care, and he just requires a home that is understanding, able to give him a lot of time, and potentially hard of hearing thanks to the screaming.
Oh, okay. So I should say that this is Samantha Patera. And this is Connecticut Parrot Rescue. Where are you guys based out of?
We use a number of foster homes throughout Connecticut. We keep the birds in home situations and home environments so that they're easier to be adopted. So we don't actually have a central facility.
Okay. Where are you based out of?
Throughout foster homes throughout Connecticut.
Oh, okay. All right. So tell us about how the birds come to you. How many do you currently have under your care?
We have an average of 16 at a time. Right now, we're probably a little higher than that, probably around 20, 24. Birds come to us through our partnerships with the Humane Society. Andrew, for example, was surrendered to them, an owner surrender. But a lot of them are found through animal control, or their owners reach out to us directly should they no longer be able to care for their birds, or they're being evicted, or they have other financial or health concerns.
What are the range of types of birds that you have?
We have all the way from little parakeets, which are parrots, and people don't realize that. So all the way from parakeets and parrots, all the way up to macaws, cockatoos, and everything in between.
And also range of ages?
From 1 year old up to the oldest we've had in is about 47 years old.
Well, let's talk a little bit about somebody who always thought they might want a bird for a pet. Is there a particular type of bird that tends to be rather more compatible or conducive to a a first-time owner?
We always advise people to start small, because if you start big, the bite is obviously bigger, the demands are bigger. So start small. Whenever you work with a rescue, we're going to take the time to introduce you to a number of different birds and make sure there's a truly a right match between you and the bird actually chooses the person. Whereas, you know, just purchasing at a local store, depends how big your credit card is, you know, the bird you can walk out with. So yeah, we take the time, and if it's not the right match, we always take the bird back, no questions asked, and we actually stay in touch with our adopters thereafter to ensure that the match is as permanent as possible.
Okay. And what are the, you know, what is the range of both cost and responsibility for taking on, you know, even a small bird as a pet?
Well, adoption fees through us range from about $30 all the way up to approximately $500 for the larger bird. It's about a third, if not less, of what a bird would be in a store. Care-wise, they usually come with a cage, but there's always the option to upgrade cages and supplies and that kind of thing. You want to give them a fresh variety of fruits and veggies every single day, so that's probably your biggest add-on, and toys. Birds love to shred toys, and we encourage them to do that as much as possible. So it just depends on the bird.
Are the most successful large bird owners the ones that have graduated up and kind of learned the ropes?
Absolutely. They understand the needs of the birds. They are able to accommodate them both space, financially, just, you know, and probably temperament-wise. They've graduated up to different sizes.
Are the various kinds of birds that you have, do they exhibit different types of temperament? Are there those birds that are more friendly and conducive versus ornery?
Every bird, unfortunately and fortunately, is an individual.
Oh, okay.
So while the little ones can be more successfully placed in a variety of homes because they are smaller and their needs are less, the larger ones are very particular about who they like and don't like. It really depends on each individual and each bird truly making a match between them, and that's why we require multiple visits, just to make sure that there's as close a fit as possible.
But in general, for somebody who sees one of the large birds on a nature program and says, "Mom, Dad, I want one of those," they're not going to walk into a place like Connecticut Parrot Rescue and walk out a day or a few weeks later with a bird of that nature.
More than likely not. Firstly, addressing the "Mom, I want that bird," or someone seeing that bird on, you know, on TV or online, we truly believe that birds should not be pets. They should be protected in their wild environment where they belong and where they can actually flourish. We actually only, unfortunately, are here because of the need for us, that people have brought them into homes and now they need to be placed. When they come to Connecticut Parrot Rescue, again, we assess their experience, their abilities, their schedule, and their ability to look after and provide the best home for the bird they're interested in. If they've got all that experience and the bird that they were interested in was that big one and it matched and it fits with them and it matches their needs, then great, we are happy to support them through that adoption. If not, we try and talk them into a more suitable size.
Okay. Yeah. Kind of riffing off that concept though, Samantha, you know, these days a lot of the you know, back in my childhood, the Disney movies, they would have a lot of live animals. Now, through computer-generated animation and stuff, they're making what appears to be various types of animals, particularly birds, in some cases, very different in cartoons than they are in real life. And I'm sure that kind of amplifies the challenge.
Yes and no. I mean, we are huge proponents of CGI in entertainment, and we're utterly against any form of animals in entertainment. Mm-hmm. We were recently contacted by a company who wanted to put a bird on Broadway for 2 months, and it was just completely inhumane and against the interests of the bird.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, I think, you know, while it may heighten the interest in a bird, I think it also, when people see the stark contrast of what a bird is really like, they maybe reassess their interest in a particular breed.
And could you name some of the breeds that you have?
Right now we have a lovebird, cockatiels, parakeets, sun conures, trying to think, black-capped conures, Amazons, cockatoos, and we even have a Moluccan cockatoo, which was one of the largest in our placement program as well.
So So the one that we're meeting here today is, you know, from back in my childhood, this was the Beretta bird. And this is a cockatoo.
Yes, okay. He's a self-crested cockatoo native to Australia. And as I said, he's only 3 years old. He's going to live at least 70 years if all goes well. And he just needs consistency and a home that can give him a lot of care.
Okay. All right, Andrew, we're going to give your mommy back. Thank you. Samantha Patera is with Connecticut Parrot Rescue. If you'd like to learn more about the organization and what they do, or perhaps support them, ctparrotrescue.org is their website. Samantha, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for your time.
All right, we just met Karen Hackett with Companion Pet Rescue and Transport. Karen is here from the Bethany area, representing this organization that has a base in Southbury, but is actually based in Tennessee, right?
Correct. We rescue our dogs from the Jackson, Tennessee area. And after they're vetted, all of their shots, they're spayed and neutered, and eligible to come up to Connecticut, then we bring them to Connecticut and try to find homes here. Our founder, Molly Bowen, was originally part of the Humane Society board in Jackson and recognized that there was a need for companion animals in the New England area. And so that's when we started transporting and making available dogs that we thought would be good companion dogs.
So how long have you been with the organization?
I've been with the organization 3 years, but the organization's been around since 2004.
Okay. What brought you to this type of pursuit as a volunteer?
You know, I have a day job that I work 50 hours a week, and I really wanted to feel like I was doing something that was impacting my community. And my first volunteer thing was just going and picking up dog food at a location that had donated a lot of food to us. So that was my first day out as a volunteer.
So tell me how your organization works in terms of process, how you find the dogs, transport them, and then eventually connect them with their new loving homes.
We have rescuers down in the Jackson area that are pulling dogs from shelters there. Sometimes we have people that have found, unfortunately, buckets of puppies left on the side of the road. People are selling puppies in the Walmart parking lot. We'll bring those puppies and dogs into our care. Sometimes they're just wandering around. We vet them there, and then we make them available through our website. Some of our dogs get adopted before they ever get here. And some of them get here and then attend events every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And the best way to connect with us is on our website, cprdogs.com. You can fill out the application there. Once you're an approved adopter, you're available to adopt any dog in our care.
Excellent. And you're the event coordinator, you said?
I am the event coordinator. So I schedule all of our events around the state every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
So this program will be playing probably by mid to the end of June. Where might people come to actually interact with you versus hearing about you on the radio?
Well, you can check our website for our calendar. On Fridays, we're always in Southbury at the Town Green with North Shore Animal League. So you can find us there on the North Shore mobile unit. Okay. On Saturdays and Sundays, we're either at usually a Petco or a PetSmart in the southern part of the state, or we're at our facility at an open house.
And is there are you just dogs?
We are just dogs.
And what are the range? It's like soup to nuts in terms of breeds and ages?
Yeah, all of our dogs are going to be mixed breeds. We try to look for dogs that we believe are going to be good companion animals for families. So we have all numbers of breeds, all ages, anywhere from 10 to 12 weeks of age, all the way up to several years old.
Okay, excellent. Well, thanks for taking the time. As the wind is kicking up here at Catherine's Butterfly Party in Newtown, talking with Karen Hackett with the Companion Pet Rescue and Transport, and it's CPRDogs.com. Thank you very much, Karen. Great to meet you. All right, continuing our adventures here at Catherine's Butterfly Party at Fairfield Hills, I've been had the pleasure of meeting Chris Evers, who's the founder and director of Animal Embassy. You can learn about them at animalembassy.com or perhaps invite them to your gathering. Chris, welcome to Newtown. Thanks for coming.
Thank you very much. I wouldn't miss it.
So we chatted a little bit before we turned on the microphone. You have been interacting and caring for animals since you were just a little boy.
So I started at the Dairy Nature Center when I was a 12-year-old kid. I was a volunteer, junior counselor, senior counselor, assistant director, and then I went on to work at many different organizations and cross-train myself with animals, working with different age groups, different people from different backgrounds, and then traveling around the world to learn as much as I can about the environment in the environment.
Oh, good. Tell us a little bit about the organization.
So I created Animal Embassy largely because of a concern that I had. Too many people are buying pets without understanding the responsibility that they are taking on when they bring that life into their life. And as I teach kids, if you're going to bring a life into your life, you have a responsibility that you have to take seriously, whether it's a pet, and someday it could be a child. You have a responsibility to that life. It's not a thing. It's not an object. But too many people, especially with exotics, it's just another thing that they have. It's a possession. So I want to put a name with it. I want to give the animal an identity, help the kids to really care about it and understand that wild animals really should be in the wild. But if you do buy one from a pet shop, obviously it's not wild. It's not domesticated, but it was domestically bred. It can't go back to the wild. So if you're going to buy that animal, educate yourself before you do it.
Excellent. Well, we want to talk a little bit more about that, and that was part of the reason why we wanted to talk with you for a little bit. But you have a few animals in your possession.
A few, yes. I have close to 200. And as I say to the children, I created Animal Embassy, not Soft and Cuddly Embassy. And we care about life. So regardless of if it has lots of legs or no legs, I'm going to help them if they need us. And then we do educational programming for all ages. And a big thrust for us now is our anti-bullying program, which is called Creating Kindness Through Creatures.
Mm-hmm. And that's very personal to you.
It is. I grew up in Connecticut. I grew up in Darien, Connecticut. And unfortunately, in every community, there are the nice and there are those that aren't so nice. And so I had a number of kids that were cruel. I would say I was bullied, although we didn't call it bullying back then. It was teasing. But teasing can get ramped up to the point where it can get really rough. And I've seen in our modern times, kids are bullying other kids. They're bullying them online. There are kids that literally have been killed online because of bullying that they can't escape from.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I felt I needed to do something about that. I created Animal Embassy to solve or help solve a problem. That was that too many people are buying pets they shouldn't be buying. I want to help to prevent people from getting into a situation and bringing an animal into a situation that's not appropriate. Yeah. But now I'm seeing other problems that I might be able to address with all these amazing animals that I've rescued and adopted.
So how do you want to see the bullying program ramp up?
I would love to see this program in every community in Connecticut. I would then like to figure out how do I get it beyond the borders of Connecticut. But I'm one guy. I've got a staff of, I think, 10 people at this point, some part-time, but we've got a number of full-time people, full-time curator, full-time office person, who's now my assistant director.
Oh, okay.
And then I've got a full-time educator and then a lot of part-time people with 200 animals and programming all over Connecticut and New York. I need people, and I hope that keeps growing, especially this anti-bullying program, because it is science-based, but I'm talking about community instead of using the word habitat. But what is a habitat? It's a community. And every one of these animals that I've rescued and adopted does not get the opportunity to be in their community. We do. And then we've got a choice. How do we want to behave in our community? And as I ask the kids, whose community is it? They're like, it's mine. It's mine, it's yours, it's ours. So let's take care of it together. The animal's role is set from birth. They don't get to choose. And unfortunately, my animals don't get to be in their community, but each one would provide a supporting role to their community, regardless of who they are, because every animal plays a role.
I love a place.
So we do too, but we get to choose what that role is. So the anti-bullying program really helps the kids to think about the people in the community who are helping the community to run properly so that we can be happy, we can be healthy, and we can be safe in our community. And the kids come up with teachers and the police and the fire department. And then I help to expand that and say, what about the crossing guard? What about the bus driver? What about the person that plows the streets? What about the person that cleans the school? What about the people that haul off the garbage? All of these people are playing supporting roles. And they get paid for their job. But by doing their job, they're helping the community.
Excellent.
We all have the ability to help in some way, whether it's our job or not.
Great sentiment. And a perfect fit for Catherine's day. Absolutely. Here at Fairfield. Litchfield Hills. Let's switch gears for just a few minutes and take advantage of the great education that you've amassed, as well as the interaction with some of the kinds of animals that have been donated to you, as I heard you describe.
I'm sensitive about that term.
Yeah, I know. And we've talked to a number of more unconventional pet representatives here today who all sort of tell the same story. And we saw a young lady walk up here, easily mid to late high school age, and the minute she saw you with the porcupine, she said, I want one. And it goes back to what you said at the beginning, but let's talk about some of the pets or animals that you most frequently see cast away after the novelty wears off in a day or two or a week or two. What are some of the animals that are easy to keep and conducive to the types of homes and families and communities we have here in Connecticut?
Yeah. So I guess I'll start by saying I'm asked often by parents, what's an appropriate pet for me to buy for my child? And my response, and I'm not being rude, but my response is, I don't know your child. I don't know your family. I don't know your living situation. I don't know your economic situation.
Yeah,
I can't tell you what's the best pet for you. Because what's best for me isn't going to be the same for you. And that's true of whether it's a dog or a cat. I like German Shepherds, but that's not going to be appropriate for everybody. I'm not a small dog guy. I'm a big dog guy. I'm an active person. I do a lot outdoors. So a dog that wants to run and wants to explore, hey, that's the dog for me. So you've got to look at whatever the pet is, and you need to know first, how big does it get? How long does it live? What are its requirements? What are the animal's needs? How are they going to be healthy under your care? And it isn't just physical health, it's mental health. You have to be able to provide that animal with what they need to be happy, healthy, and safe. So as I say to the kids, you've got to be the parent to the pet. So are you prepared to be the parent to this particular pet? All right, so if we're looking at lizards, for example, a bearded dragon, a leopard gecko would be more reasonable than a monitor lizard, an iguana, or a chameleon. Chameleons are really fragile, and that's not a beginner animal. And it's more like having a fish. It's beautiful, but you don't touch it. You know, now you can touch the chameleon more than you can touch the fish, but it's more about appreciating the beauty of that animal, setting it up in an environment that is suitable to that animal, just like you would do for a fish. Okay. And you're not looking for a fish to be your best friend, and people are happy to know that there it is. Yeah. You know, it helps us to be calm. Yeah. So why do you want the pet? Are you looking for a pal? Don't buy a tortoise, because if you're looking for a friend, your tortoise isn't going to care about you. Yeah. And that makes sense, because tortoises, being reptiles, don't have parental care. They're not social.
Yeah.
So if you want something social, you might look to a bird or to a mammal, because they have parental care and they are social creatures.
Yeah.
But there's a parrot somewhere, I can hear him.
Yep.
In the audience here. Parrots bond, and parrots flock. And so if you're at school, or you're at work, or you're social, everybody's got too much to do. So who is around for the bird?
Yeah.
So now that bird is living in a cage. They often have their wings clipped so that for their own safety, so they don't fly into a window and break their neck. So if you've got a bird, and that bird lives in a cage, can't fly, and can't socialize, you've got a depressed bird that's probably going to become neurotic and pluck their feathers and live a shortened life, because their heart isn't going to be as strong as it should be. They're in prison. You know, and I'm not saying there aren't people that give birds great homes, but that's a challenge.
Yeah.
So again, who are you? What do you need? What do you want? I wanted a dog, but somehow I've got 200 of other people's exotic animals that they didn't want anymore. If I had a chinchilla here today, the kids would come up and 9 out of 10 of them would walk away from here and say, I want a chinchilla. I don't want Animal Embassy to be increasing the incidence of people buying things that they can't handle.
Right.
Chinchillas live for 30 years.
Right.
They're rodents. They have sharp teeth. They're at the bottom of the food chain. They're afraid of large predators. We are one. So if you can properly socialize the animal, and you saw I socialized a porcupine, so can it be done?
Yes.
Yes. But who's got the time?
and the kids don't. And chinchillas live for 30 years.
So what my takeaway from our chat is that for anybody that wants any kind of pet, dog, cat, parrot, reptile, porcupine, chinchilla, or a tortoise that may live 150 years, they need to get educated and learn a lot first before they go out and make a decision.
Absolutely. Yeah, even a fish. There are people that are buying arowanas, pacus, catfish species that get massive. I adopted a channel catfish. It's now probably about 8 pounds. And why do I have it? Because it outgrew their tank. We can avoid these problems if we educate ourselves first, regardless of what kind of animal we want to bring into our life. I'm not against pet ownership. I'm against irresponsible pet ownership.
Great. Well, a great way to end our broadcast today with some very, very educational and wise advice. Let folks know how they can learn about you or maybe come to be an animal ambassador.
So everybody can be an animal ambassador. And really what we're trying to do, as I say to the kids, is change the world. And I picked the spotted salamander to be our logo because they go through a metamorphosis. And what am I trying to do? Change the world. And what does the salamander go through? Metamorphosis, which is a tremendous change. And how do I want to change the world? Help people to be kinder to each other, kinder to animals, better to the earth, and better to their community. Let's build and let's help each other. And we can make the world a better place. It's already great. Let's make it better.
Well, I'm already better, and I hope our listeners are better for having met you and heard about your work. AnimalEmbassy.com. Chris Evers is the founder and director of the organization. If you'd like to learn more about what they do, help them out, support them, or perhaps even learn about their anti-bullying initiative, just go to AnimalEmbassy.com to get started. Chris, great to meet you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And they can join also our email list on our website, and we do the social networking, so you can certainly meet us there.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.vocat@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours in the New Haven area at 440 Wheelers Farms Road in Milford, and for our Hartford stations at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. This is John Vocat, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab at our radio station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.